The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're off and running on another week. It's Monday morning here in the great state of Oklahoma. Looks like it's going to be a pretty warm week. PYC is off and running, at least the orientation for the workers. We had our first orientation lecture yesterday, and they're busy, hard at work, setting up the campus for all of the campers that are due to arrive tomorrow. And as I say, it's going to be hot at the start of camp. So if you're listening out there as a parent sending your children off to PYC, keep in mind the heat. Of course, we'll do everything we can to hydrate the young people. The tents are going up around at the various activities so that there is plenty of shade. But it still is going to be hot. It is an Oklahoma summer, after all. Leaving that aside, the campus just looks great because of the rain that we've been getting this summer. So hopefully we'll get some occasional rain showers during the camp experience as well to just keep all of the fields a little bit soft and green, we hope. Well, that's going on. As I say, the campers arrive tomorrow. And then next week we've got a string of packs, one day only, for three cities, Phoenix, Los Angeles, and then Sacramento. So we'll just hit all three of those cities on three straight days, so there won't be any two-day events next week, but we hopefully we can just get a lot of coverage in the southwest of the United States. Speaking of the United States, some important stories regarding the United States of Europe, and these are stories that typically are ignored by the Western press, ignored certainly by the American media, but it is getting some coverage in Europe, and we'll look at that here in just a moment. I also want to draw a little bit of attention to a piece that we posted at Watch Jerusalem, our website. We're due to start a new publication, a new printed magazine on that same subject or theme later this year. So we'll come to that later on in this segment as well. And then later on in the show, we'll also get back to that material that we skipped over on Friday. Some of the material we've collected on the breakdown of the family. Well, Benjamin Netanyahu, he's warning of small yet very dangerous steps. There was an article in the Jerusalem Post talking about Iran's recent decision to upgrade its uranium enrichment beyond the limits that were set back in 2015. And the prime minister of Israel said this is a dangerous step, and he referred back to the 1930s and dangerous steps that the Nazis were taking and that the world just ignored. What an insight it gives to us if we're just grounded in history. He spoke at the start of his weekly cabinet meeting yesterday, the prime minister did, referring to this Washington Post article talking about upping the uranium enrichment. And he said this type of thinking is a mistake. The Washington Post evidently said that, well, this is not really that bad because it's just a small step. It's just a little bit of an increase. And so we don't really have to worry about it. And Netanyahu was quick to say this is dangerous. It's dangerous to think that way. It's dangerous to say that, well, it's just a little step in the wrong direction. Why should we worry about it? This article, the Jerusalem Post, it says World War II began in Europe, he said, when Nazi Germany took one small step to enter the Rhineland. That was in 1936. A small step. No one said anything and no one did anything. The next step was the Anschluss, the connection with Austria. That's speaking of the annexation of Austria in 1938. And the next step was entering the Sudetenland in Czechoslovakia. That's October 1938. And no one did anything. Netanyahu said, of course, the rest is known. Poland and then World War II. We now know all of that history. We now know all about that nightmare. But what about those first small steps when the world stood and did nothing? It's called the unnecessary war. That's what Winston Churchill referred to it as, because it all could have been prevented. It was totally unnecessary. If it would have been dealt with, if it would have been confronted early on, now with respect to today, we know that it's not going to be confronted, not in the way that will finally end this menace in Iran, because we know it's going to be the trigger, the clash between the King of the South and the King of the North. That's going to be the trigger that takes this world into, that plunges this world into World War III. And so we're seeing the beginning, these small yet very dangerous steps. The Post says here, Iran's decision is a very dangerous step, he said. I call on my friends, the heads of France, Britain, and Germany. You signed this nuclear agreement, and you said that once they take this step, there would be harsh sanctions. That was the decision of the Security Council. Where are you? Where are you? How come you won't stand by the agreement? Which in itself was a horrible agreement for the West. But they won't even stand by that. They won't even reapply the sanctions. Now that Iran is announcing that, well, sure, we're going to violate the terms of that agreement. It says Netanyahu said he was not asking this question in a defiant manner, but rather with the common knowledge of history and a knowledge of what happens when aggressive totalitarian regimes cross the line on the way to things that are very dangerous to all of us. Take the actions you promised to take. Impose the sanctions. Take the actions you promised that you would take. Well, we'll see what Europe does. To this point, only the United States, only Donald Trump has pulled out of that agreement and has reapplied sanctions. But what about the European nations? This article on the United States of Europe, it's by Con Coughlin at the National. And this is something, it's going to be really important that we watch this, because no one seems to care about all of this rhetoric, about all of these plans to counter the United States of America's power and influence by forming a United States of Europe. And of course, that's prophesied right in your Bible. Revelation 17:12. 10 kings. 10 kings coming together, and they have one mind, it says in verse 13. And they give their power and their strength to the beast power, the King of the North. Coughlin says here, the EU's new leaders regard the creation of a European superstate as a welcome alternative to America's global dominance. Well, we've got to do it, all the more so because of Donald Trump. He's so evil. He's so belligerent. He's destroying NATO. He's doing all these things. We'll get to that in just a second, some of the things that the radical left are saying about this president. It's really shocking to the ears to hear it, to hear the chants. Yesterday, following the United States' victory in the Women's World Cup soccer. And here they are chanting. We can't even play the clips. So much profanity. And they're just taking what the radical left is saying and running with it. These people that are duped and deceived. In any event, it says here, the changing of the guard at the top of the European Union with a new lineup of top officials set to be approved by the European Parliament could well result in increased tensions in the Western Alliance. It says, and the emergence of a new EU leadership that is preoccupied with pursuing its own federalist agenda could have a profound bearing on its approach to global issues, especially in the Middle East. Coughlin says that's certainly the conclusion being reached by many Western diplomats following 27 hours of intense summit negotiations in Brussels earlier this week that resulted in the nominations for the EU's most important posts for the next 5 years. And so coming out of these deliberations are all of these calls for a united Europe, a United States of Europe. Ursula von der Leyen, she's the nominee to be the next European Commission president. And Political pulled together all of these quotes from her over the years. My aim is the United States of Europe, modeled on federal states like Switzerland, Germany, or the U.S. That's what she said in 2011. Von der Leyen said, I imagine the Europe of my children or grandchildren, not as a loose union of states, trapped by national interests. No, this is going to be a federal collection of states, a United States of Europe. And then as defense minister, she also called for a defense union and an army of Europeans. This is the new nominee to be the next European Commission president. Don't dismiss it. Don't sit back and say, well, it's just all rhetoric, and that's what it's been for years. Keep an eye on it. Watch and pray, as Jesus said. This is something, as I say, that's just going to be ignored in Western media. It's going to be ignored here in the United States. And even in the UK, they're preoccupied, as you know, with Brexit and Boris Johnson, who looks like he's going to be the next prime minister. He says he's going to make Britain the greatest place on earth. Boris Johnson. He's going to make Britain great again, you could say. We've pointed out before some of the similarities between him and President Trump. Right now, it looks like 75% of conservatives support him. And only 25% support his opponent. So he's on the way in. He was criticized in the liberal leftist media over the weekend for saying that people in Britain should speak English as their first language. And everyone in the media over there immediately rose up to criticize him for saying such a thing. Just shows how out of touch they are. That's what most people in Britain probably think. That's what most people in the United States probably think. But their knee-jerk reaction, it's telling. And then you get, like you heard at the top of the hour, you see some of these leaks, what Britain's diplomat here in the U.S., its ambassador to the U.S., said about Donald Trump, some very undiplomatic things, to say the least. And yet at the same time, very typical when you think about the left, the radical left, and its attack against traditions, against this sitting president. Brad McDonald's had a piece recently about Britain's deep state. We've talked about the United States, America's deep state, and how it's continuing to go after Donald Trump. And it's interesting to just see this link between the two. Of course, you know about all of the spying that was going on, spying on the Trump administration, spying on the Trump campaign, and how that those deep state officials used the UK spying apparatus and Italy and Australia and other nations too, but they were working hand in hand, the United States and the United Kingdom. This is from the Daily Mail regarding one of these memos from the British ambassador. It says, and referring to the allegations of collusion between the Trump camp and Russia, since largely disproved, the memo says, the worst cannot be ruled out. That's coming from Britain's ambassador to the U.S. Even after all the evidence is in, see, he's just like so many over here. The Mueller report comes out, it clears the president, and they say, well, but still, the worst cannot be ruled out. I mean, we just can't rule it out entirely. Well, this British ambassador, he's also very much in the anti-Brexit camp. So very predictable. You know where they're going to stand on Brexit. You know where they're going to stand on President Trump. Very revealing when you see some of their emails and such. Well, here in America, lots going on as well. Two big earthquakes in California, and amazingly, not a whole lot of damage, particularly after this second one that I think was measured at 7.1 on the Richter scale. A 7.1 magnitude earthquake rattling Southern California. People are on edge there. As I say, we're going to be there, when will be? I guess it would be Sunday or Monday morning, so a week from now. We'll be there for the campaign, something to pray about. We certainly don't want to see any disruption there. But they're on edge, and now it had been, I think, 20 years or so since the last serious or major earthquake, and they had one at 6.4, I think it was, last week. And then again, as I say, Friday night, 7.1. It's the worst in something like 20 years. There was a story that broke over the weekend as well regarding Jeffrey Epstein. He's the billionaire New York financier who's had, all, I guess he's a child molester offender. The New York Times says this morning he's long accused of molesting dozens of girls. It says two people with knowledge of the charges said on Saturday night that Mr. Epstein had been arrested in the New York area and was in federal custody. I guess he's going before a federal magistrate today. But it says here when Mr. Epstein, 66, had avoided federal criminal charges in 2007 and 2008 in a widely criticized plea deal whose lenient terms continue to roil the Justice Department and are facing new scrutiny in the Me Too era. It says he pleaded guilty to lesser state charges of soliciting prostitution, served 13 months in a county lockup, and registered as a sex offender. It says his jail arrangement allowed him to get out of the Palm Beach County stockade 6 days a week to work out of his office. So very lenient sentence. This goes back 10, 12 years ago. It says the U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan, which brought the charges against Mr. Epstein, declined comment on Saturday night. CBS Miami reported that Mr. Epstein was arrested late Saturday afternoon in Teterboro Airport. This is where we were just a week ago. For the campaign, that airport. It was right after his private jet landed from Paris. Then he was taken into custody. And I bring this out just to remind you, this was a story from Fox News. 2 years ago, this was when the campaign was in full swing, Donald Trump against Hillary Clinton. And only at Fox News did you hear about this story. It says, this is from May 13th, 2016. Flight logs show Bill Clinton flew on sex offender's jet much more than previously known. He was good friends with Mr. Epstein, this billionaire New York financier. Fox said former President Bill Clinton was at a former President Bill Clinton was a much more frequent flyer on a registered sex offender's infamous jet than previously reported, with flight logs showing the former president taking at least 26 trips aboard the Lolita Express. That's the nickname that this private jet had. It says even apparently ditching his Secret Service detail for at least five of the flights, according to records obtained by Fox News. I won't get into some of the detail here, these flights, and some of the names, these mysterious female names that appeared on the flight logs. But this was something that was happening as the campaign was going on, and these trips were going back to the early 2000s. This was following Bill Clinton's presidency. And then you know all about, if you're old enough, you know all about the cover-up of the Monica Lewinsky scandal. If not for the Drudge Report, NBC, there were news outlets that had the story, and they covered it up. And then the behavior just continued. You see the double standard. It's on display every day. If you're a Republican and you have skeletons in your closet, then you need to be destroyed. Listen to what Senator Kamala Harris said about President Trump. This was while she's on the campaign trail. She's running for president. And she said this about Mr. Trump, clip two.
He has predatory instincts and a predatory nature. And the thing about predators is this. Predators, by their nature, identify and then prey on the vulnerable. Predators are cowards. And we don't need a predator in the White House.
So it's statements like that, really, why you see chants like you saw in Paris yesterday aimed at Donald Trump. If a womanizer comes in on the Republican side, he has to be destroyed. And, of course, the womanizing, so far as we know, it goes back to years and years and years before he ran for president. But think about the president that was in the White House during the 1990s and what was happening while he was in the White House and what happened after, immediately after he was in the White House. And the media all throughout it, even to this day, covering it up, covering up all of the seedy details, even to this very day. Not the same, of course, with the current president. It's a double standard, and that's on display every day as well. I mentioned last week the reaction to, before it happened, just the reaction to the July 4th celebration and what the media, they were really going crazy because there was going to be an Abram tank on display, and the president, he can't give a speech on July 4th because that would be like a campaign rally. And this is taxpayer funded. And then here's a montage that Media Research Center put together on the media freakout over his July 4th speech, ahead of the July 4th speech. Clip three.
Donald Trump has hijacked the nation's previously nonpartisan 4th of July celebration.
Is this just norm-defying, or is there anything dangerous about it?
It's just obscene.
And the speech is going to be dreadful.
They're going to have their Confederate flags flying and their license plates and all kinds of troublemaking.
You will hear criticism of his critics. You will hear a celebration of self.
There'll be a lot of other people that are going to meet like in a storm, and you're going to have a real conflict.
There's all kinds of catastrophes. They're not sure if the bridges over the Potomac can handle the tanks.
He's turning a traditionally nonpartisan event into a Trump-focused campaign-style rally.
Sure looks like a partisan re-election rally on public space.
Donald Trump's campaign rally in Washington paid for by the American taxpayer.
A campaign event.
Some kind of a campaign speech.
A political rally.
Partisan event.
Combination Trump rally and Kim Jong-un style military parade.
The president's vision bears a closer resemblance to the chest-thumping displays put on by authoritarian regimes.
This is the kind of military
display that we were used to seeing from the Soviet Union.
I'm thinking Red Square, North Korea, Egypt.
To hope for violence would be, of course, treasonous. Not to expect it would be naive.
Of course, there's going to be violence. Bridges are going to collapse. It's just like Red Square, North Korea. They said all of that in the lead up to this speech. And then when the speech happened, he just was out there celebrating America's history. That's all there was to it. Could they have gotten it more wrong? And yet they wake up on July 5th and they just carry on. They dust off and carry on with the next fake news story. And then even, I don't know when the Epstein story broke. I think it was Saturday night. And that's just screaming Bill Clinton. That's got Bill Clinton all over it. And the most that you're going to see is maybe a passing reference that, well, he was pretty good friends with Bill Clinton. But, you know, we should also point out that he knew Donald Trump, Mr. Epstein. That's the kind of coverage that it got. It's just appalling. And things that some of these Democrat candidates are saying that are not even challenged. You heard the one from Kamala Harris. Joe Biden over the weekend. He's the front runner among the Democrats. And here he is talking about Russian interference in the U.S. election process. This is clip one.
Look at what's happening with Putin. While Putin is trying to undo our elections, he is undoing elections in Europe. Look what's happened in Hungary. Look what's happened in Poland. Look what's happened in Moldova. Look what's happening. You think that would have happened on my watch or Barack's watch? You can't answer that, but I promise you it wouldn't have. And it didn't.
It did. It totally happened on his watch. It totally happened on Barack Obama's watch. Barack Obama was president until January 20th, 2017. And Joe Biden was the vice president. And Russia was interfering in our election. It's now confirmed, I guess. They interfered all the way through. And they actually helped Donald Trump win. That's what we learned from this CIA and deep state assessment. December of 2016. And it all happened on their watch. And then there's the reporter, of course. I'm sure I didn't watch the whole interview. But I'm sure the reporter was there just nodding along. He actually said with a straight face, that would never happen under our watch. It's unbelievable. Some of the things that they say, some of the ways that they just revise the history in real time even. Well, you could go on and on about it, I guess. This double standard, it's something that we've certainly put a lot of attention on in the last couple of years. At our Watch Jerusalem website, we just had a story posted, I think, yesterday. Christopher Eames wrote it. And then there was a, I believe Brent was saying there was a news release today about some of these fines regarding this biblical Ziklag. Christopher Eames says here, we've found biblical Ziklag, declared a press release from one of the Israeli excavation teams. It says a massive archaeological effort has taken place at the site over the past 3 years, excavating through a square kilometer of the tell and providing evidence for what could be considered King David's first city. So it mentions this Ziklag city. It's mentioned 15 times in the Bible, and it goes back to when David was on the run from Saul. He had his few hundred men, and he met up with this king in this Philistine city and asked if he could seek refuge in this city. It's described in 1 Samuel 27. I'll just read a couple of verses. And David said to Achish, If I have now found grace in your eyes, let them give me a place in some town in your country, in the country rather, that I may dwell there. For why should your servant dwell in the royal city with you? It says, then Achish gave him Ziklag that day, Wherefore Ziklag pertains unto the kings of Judah unto this day. So Ziklag was sort of the first city that was mentioned in association with the newly anointed king, King David, the one who would be king. And as the rest of Chris's article brings out, this excavation that's gone on for a few years there, they're turning up things that connect to that time period and that connect to David's reign. So more and more evidence, more and more evidence being unearthed, revealing the truth of the Bible, revealing just how influential King David truly was. Speaking of Watch Jerusalem, Brent, our Jerusalem correspondent, he told me this morning that we've now had 71 Israeli subscribers to the new Watch Jerusalem magazine, the print magazine that's due to come out. I think the first issue comes out in September, and we've just been advertising it, I believe, on our website over there. So it's been, I think, over the years, we've just had a handful of people subscribe to the Trumpet magazine, from Israel, I mean. So in the first few weeks, to see 71 Israelis subscribing to this magazine, that's very exciting to see, and something that we can certainly be praying about, that the work on the magazine that they're doing over at Edstone and down in Jerusalem, that God would bless that effort, and that the magazine, the new magazine, Watch Jerusalem, that it would have just a wonderful start coming in September. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email us some feedback, we went through quite a lot of it on Friday's show. If you'd like to email the show, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm, and you can also submit audio feedback at the Trumpet Daily Radio Show website page, and you can find that at the trumpet.com website. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
A turning point in recent history has gone almost entirely overlooked. Since that time, an unseen cause has brought about national and world troubles in unprecedented fashion. Crises are intensifying as never before. In our generation, we are seeing radical changes to culture, family, education, religion, science, finance, politics, international relations. Everything has been affected. You cannot understand events without recognizing this unseen cause. The United States has been shaken in astonishing fashion. Have you wondered why the world's number one superpower is declining so rapidly? Are you concerned about where the current administration is leading this country? The Bible provides penetrating insight into the invisible cause of society's decline. America is prophesied to fall before it rises again. The Bible also gives extraordinary insight into how that fall will come about. This insight puts the seriousness and urgency of current events in their true perspective. Understand what's in store for America and why. Visit thetrumpet.com and click on the Literature tab to request this free, enlightening booklet, America Under Attack.
The Trumpet Daily.
During the New York PAC last week, we opened the event by discussing family breakdown, the strength and the stability of our nation, and how that it's crumbling because of family dysfunction. And you can study this from just about any angle and see whether it's, you know, mothers leading in the home or the family, absentee fathers, of course, single parents, or the rise in single parenting, the decline of marriage, and then the trouble, too, with so many of our children ruling over parents, Isaiah 3. all of these disturbing stats and figures coming in about social media and the impact that that's having on the younger generation. Many kids today are just being raised by technology, modern technology, and popular culture. I was telling the workers yesterday, so refreshing for young people to come into God's youth camp. And if they have any gadgets, they have to turn them in so that they can just spend 3 weeks interacting with people, talking with people. How about that? No gadgets, no earphones, earbuds, whatever you want to call them. So different. But we're going up against so much. We're going up against so many influences coming from the devil. It is, after all, his world. It's Satan's world. This is not God's world. It's Satan's world. And it's just filled with lies and deceit, gossip, rumors, hatred, vanity, selfishness. One disturbing trend that we've even written about at thetrumpet.com is the suicide rate for young people. Young people who are killing themselves. Young people who feel like they have no hope. This is from just a few weeks ago at Axios. It says the overall suicide rate for this age group, that's 15 to 24 they're talking about, the overall suicide rate among 15 to 24-year-olds has risen by 51% over the past decade. This has been accompanied by increased social media use, anxiety, depression, and self-inflicted injuries among young adults and teens. This is according to a new study. Another one here, this is from Bloomberg, again, just a few weeks ago. It says, so many statistics say that life in the U.S. is getting better. Unemployment's at its lowest. Well, it goes through some of the positive stats. It says, yet something isn't right. And if you notice, again, the focus on the positive, it's always about jobs or money. As long as there's money, as long as there's jobs, then everything in the United States is good. Never mind the family. Never mind what's happening to our children. Never mind the total breakdown of the traditional family. It says here, yet something isn't right. In 2017, 47,000 people died by suicide, and there were 1.4 million suicide attempts. That's just in one calendar year. Over a million people attempting suicide? It says the U.S. suicide rates are at the highest level since World War II, and it's getting worse, it says. It's getting worse. It says although suicide is the starkest indicator of mental distress, others abound. Drug overdoses claimed 70,000 lives in 2017, and 17.3 million, or 7% of U.S. adults, reported suffering at least one major depressive episode in the past year. So a lot of people depressed, overdosing on drugs, committing suicide. It says here life expectancy, perhaps the broadest measure of a nation's health, has fallen for three straight years, in part because of the rise in drug overdoses and suicides. That's the first three-year drop since 1915 to 18. So the first three-year drop in a century, in 100 years. The problems may have different and varied causes, but what they add up to is a national mental health epidemic. The damage is on the scale of the global financial crisis, yet we lack the institutions, policies, and determination to address it. Well, you'll hear some things from the Trump administration about the drug overdose problem, but really, for the most part, you don't hear a thing from either side about the dysfunctional family, about the total breakdown of the family. We had an article at The Trumpet about the rising suicide rates. And here again, if leaders say or do anything about it, they're basically just dealing with the effects. They're not getting to root causes. They won't look at the cause. They won't look at the family. They won't look at marriage and family. They just ignore it. In the missing dimension, this is actually the missing dimension in education, an article, not the book, The Missing Dimension in Sex, but it's Mr. Armstrong, Herbert Armstrong, writing back in April of 1969. He says, there is one other building block that must also be in the foundation of a healthy and prosperous society, that is the home and the family relationship. And he's writing this, keep in mind, in 1969, Mr. Armstrong says, this is a sick, sick world, regardless of denials by some politicians. The cause of this acute sickness is the fact that this vital dimension is missing on campus and in the home. Education has neglected not only the moral and spiritual values on campus, but also in the home. Absence of putting this dimension into practice in the home has been leading to the breakdown of the family. And when the family institution breaks down, civilization is doomed. See, it's a sick world, regardless of denials by some politicians. You're going to hear the slogan all through the campaign cycle next year. We've got to keep America great. I mentioned in the first segment about Boris Johnson. We want to make Britain the greatest place on earth. They deny that this is happening. Look at all these disturbing statistics. Mr. Armstrong said in 1980, this breakdown of our family system is inscribing the handwriting on our national wall. The need of right education in this sphere is far more vital to the very question of survival than is recognized. It says, on-campus education prepares tomorrow's leaders. They will be tomorrow's parents, but tomorrow will be too late. The trend of disintegrating family relationship must be checked and reversed today if society is to be saved alive. We've got to check this. We've got to reverse this now if we're going to save ourselves, if we're going to save society. We haven't done that. We didn't do it in 1969. We didn't do it in 1980. Here we are in 2019. Look at the statistics. Teen suicide on the rise. All of this technology, all of this money in our pockets here in the United States. And yet so many disturbed and depressed young people without hope, hopeless, drifters. The family, as I noted last week, I referred back to that special issue of The Trumpet, 2017. The family is under attack. It's under attack. This is something we've written about over and again at thetrumpet.com. And of course, Satan's ultimate aim, when it's an attack on family, really it's an attack on God. That's what Satan's aiming for. That's what he really wants to destroy. The God family. In the Gospel of John, John 1 and verse 1, it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. So you had these two beings, God and the Word, living in harmony, working together. And notice what happened. Verse 14 of John 1 says, and the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. So the Word became flesh. He became God's Son. God became the Father. Father, Son. A family relationship. The Son to Mary, the bride, that is the church. How come more traditional Christian denominations can't see this? How come they can't understand this, that God is a family? Father, Son, marriage, bride, children. It's all throughout the New Testament. This is New Testament theology. The Word came in the flesh, begotten of the Father. Verse 18 says, no man has seen God at any time. The only begotten Son, which is in the bosom of the Father, he has declared him. Look at this Father-Son relationship. Jesus Christ in the bosom of the Father. Imagine a son, a loving son, right there in his Father's bosom. Jesus Christ loves his Father, and God the Father loves his Son. And this is the kind of relationship that God is drawing us into, a family relationship, a family plan, God's master plan. This is what it's all about. A father yearning to have an intimate relationship with you. Sons of God. It says in the God family vision, God the Father had a fierce determination to have a family. A fierce determination. Jesus, of course, came in the flesh and declared the Father. He didn't come and declare himself. There's a lot of Christian denominations today that believe the gospel is a gospel about Jesus. That's not what Jesus Christ taught. He didn't come with a message about himself. He came to declare the Father. Read that in John 1:18. Read it again. I just read it to you. In the God family vision, it says, that was Christ's message for mankind. It was about the Father. Our Father is the head of that wonderful, majestic God family. Our number one passion must be to declare him and his family. That's an awesome statement there. It's in the God family vision, talking about what your passion, what our passion should be, to declare the Father, to declare the God family. And we do that not just in a stated sense. We do it in the way that we live. As I was saying to the workers yesterday, so much of it comes down to our example. Here we are about to kick off another youth camp. You'll be hearing quite a lot about what we speak about at the camp these next 3 weeks, because we won't have as much time to develop a lot of additional content. And so you'll get a little bit of insight into the youth camp here in Edmond. And we'll be telling our young people about this passion that we need to have for family. John 3 in verse 16, it says, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. This is what God was willing to do for family. This, again, goes back to this fierce determination. He gave his only begotten Son. My father wrote, this goes much deeper than just the traditional family. The God family is the issue of issues in the entire Bible. If not for God, there would be no such thing as physical family. God established the family. God established marriage. God made us male and female. This is all in Genesis 1 and Genesis 2. He established or ordained all of these institutions because he is a family, because he's reproducing himself. Genesis 1:26. We have to keep going back to the foundation. We have to be curious enough to ask why family, why marriage? Most people don't even think about it. They just take these things for granted. And then it all begins to fall apart. It's crumbling before our eyes, and we think, well, but still, America's great. Britain's going to be the greatest place on earth. No problems here to worry about because we have jobs. Jobs, jobs, jobs. Verse 17, it says, "For God sent not his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved." See, God's thinking about the whole world, bringing all of them in to his family. It starts small. It's in the smallest of ways, the beginning, this new world. God's church, God's true church, the bride of Jesus Christ. But once that government is established on this earth, once the kingdom of God is set up, then the minds of all of mankind, they're going to be opened to the truth. Right now, though, it's not that way because this is not God's world, not yet. It says in verse 18, "He that believes on him is not condemned, but he that believes not is condemned already because he has not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God." And this is, notice this, this is the condemnation, that light is come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. Mankind prefers darkness over light. And you see darkness when you look at the family today. This is prophesied, this total breakdown of the family. You can look at scriptures we've repeated so many times before, 2 Timothy 3, even the natural affection that you would think would be there. It's gone. It's gone. Jesus compared our days to the days of Noah, to the days just before the flood. He compared it to Sodom and Gomorrah. And then he said, now when you see this total breakdown, make sure that you know that the return of Jesus Christ is near. The Apostle Paul said, knowing the time, that now it is high time to awake out of sleep. If you know the times that we're in, if you understand the seriousness of this total breakdown, then it should awaken us. It should sober us. It should jolt us. In Luke 21, Jesus said, "Take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with surfeiting, drunkenness, and the cares of this life, and so that that day come upon you unawares. For as a snare shall it come on all them that dwell on the face of the earth." For most people, it's going to happen at a sudden, unexpected hour. God's intervention on the affairs of this earth. But for God's people, it's not going to be a surprise at all because we're watching. Verse 36 continues, "Watch you therefore and pray always that you may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man." That's talking about his return to this earth. To stand before the Son of Man at his coming. And so we watch, zealously we watch, and we pray. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. As I said earlier, if you'd like to email the program, send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's program, and we'll see you tomorrow.